What you're about to hear is a Fear the Boot bonus episode, which goes into subject matter that is a little bit crass and edgy compared to what Fear the Boot normally covers. So if you are listening to this with children or at work, discretion is advised. And for those of you who are willing to stick around, we hope you'll enjoy the episode. For those of you who would rather not, we will catch you guys for a regular or interview episode next time. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Pat.
This is Wayne.
My name is John.
And we are just going to go ahead and do a bonus episode because this is the one we are cutting right prior to Gen Con. And it will drop immediately after Gen Con, but we are leaving here within less than 48 hours. So we got a lot going on, so we're just going to kick out a bonus episode here. We got a lot
because it means less editing, right?
Far less.
I see through this.
No, actually, way back in the day, I didn't edit the bonus episodes. I do now. Really, the difference is the amount of planning, not the amount of editing.
All right. I still say a lot on the bonus episodes, and he has to beep that.
Yeah.
Is it like your favorite Care Bear?
Yeah. A lot. The ultimate Care Bear.
Now, what's on his stomach?
And
or rather, what's not?
And 69 me, the deviant Care Bear. And
69
eats a lot
deviant?
Of ass, the other one. And
bro, that's more vanilla than Breyer's ice cream where I come from.
And here's tongue my rectum.
Well, now you're getting there.
Okay, so in the midst of this indecency, all right, we got several random things to cover. Let's start off with the one relevant thing, and then we're going to just descend into madness from there, since we haven't already.
We're already crazy.
John.
Yes, Dan. I would like to tell the Fear of the Butte community about the Blood Moon Goblins, a role-playing game project I have started up and which should be on Kickstarter as we speak, or at least as this is delivered to our audience. The Blood Moon Goblins is a 3.5 Pathfinder-compatible setting for Goblin player characters, along with suggestions how to run a full campaign there or how to have it serve as a base of enemy operations for your more normal campaign. Dan actually played in the original Blood Moon Goblins game that I ran about a year ago over MapTool. I thought it was a pretty big success and that there wasn't much like it on the market today.
Yeah, so, it sounds awesome. I want you to run this weird, you know, now that you're back for good.
Yeah, dude. No, I absolutely will. I will run it in tabletop for you guys or over Skype.
Yeah, and quick side note on that, now that John is done with law school, he has Gen Con and then a vacation, but yes. After that, he will be back on the mics more or less permanently.
That's correct.
And so, obviously, we're looking forward to that. Regarding Blood Moons, yes, I did play in the game that John ran. I played two different characters, too, because this is a goblin game. Your life expectancy is not all that long.
Well, here's the thing. I didn't make it super fatal. I just made it regular fatal. Right. I made no GM sleight of hand to save the characters. If he eats crap on the fortitude saving throw and it does 18 points of con damage, which is about what happened to you,
yeah,
then you just die. And I think by actually rendering the death rules for 3.5 Pathfinder in full detail, you'll find your campaign is amply high death.
Yeah, and I originally played a Doom Whaler.
Yes.
Who was kind of like a bard, but Brought. His bardic skill.
He is a canonical character. He will be in the game and probably illustrated by Keith Curtis.
Badass. But yeah, his bardic skill was he didn't go around singing or dancing. He went around basically talking about how the goblin god or goddess or whatever was it
Maglubiet is the proprietary god of 3.5 goblins. Yeah. I will obviously use a different name and a different mythos.
How basically this goddess is out to kill us all, and the most we can do is hope to obey our king and do what is right, and maybe our deaths won't be quite so bad. And
he was as effective as most bard characters are. Sorry, Wayne. He was pitiful in combat. You managed to roll like a one on your hit point roll four times in a row.
I did.
And he had no con modifier, so that was one hit point.
This character at fourth level had something like 7 hit points.
Yeah, no joke. It was absolutely no more than 10. And and he finally got stabbed by a needle from a poison box.
Yeah.
And we rolled the con damage, and he was not only knocked out, but dead. He was zero constitution.
So just to clarify once again, what he's putting together is a campaign setting and source book that is meant for Pathfinder, but obviously will be compatible by being a battle Pathfinder with the D&D 3.5 OGL type stuff. And what this
recommended use is with the E6 program written up by the folks over at EN World, I think. That is their special rule for capping out levels at 6 and then progressing from there with extra feats and skills.
Right.
Because in a world where you're already a goblin living in a hole, having player characters running around or even NPCs that are level 15 fighters and wizards is just broken. Even more broken than it is in regular D&D, which in my opinion is already endemically broken.
And what the Kickstarter is financing is going to be the art, which will be done by Keith Curtis, and some professional layout work, which will be done by someone that John's still working to select. As with all Kickstarter projects, there are different donation levels that will get you different rewards, up to and including, I believe, the highest one is you will actually run the game for somebody.
The maximal donation, which I am putting up, we'll say two of, because if there's two psychotic game groups enough for this, I'll entertain you both, is that I will run over the internet gaming tabletop voice, whatever, of your choice, a game of Blood Moon Goblins, roughly of the length of the original game and what I intend it to be run at, which is 8 to 10 sessions of 3 to 4 hours. So if you want me as your GM, now's your chance to hire me. Other options on the Kickstarter include a few opportunities to create a goblin with me for inclusion in the canonical game setting and for artistic rendering by Mr. Keith Curtis. And also, of course, basic pre-order options. You may essentially just pre-order the PDF and or the physical printed booklet.
Check the show notes for links to all this. It'll probably be the only thing that gets linked in the show notes, because I think this is just going to be a whole lot of nonsense and BS-ery.
Oh, maybe a few pictures, but you never know.
I don't want the pictures that come at the end of this episode.
Check the show notes for this. And also on top of that, John has put together a great video to help promote this, because Kickstarter requests that you put together a video.
Yeah, so I decided to get a little creative.
Yeah, it's pretty damn funny.
I assure you that Johnny G brand humor will permeate the video, as it will the module, and that if you've enjoyed listening to me on the show, it will be worth your $4.99 plus shipping and handling to get that PDF.
And the whole reason you're doing this is so you can see Hickman.
Yes, finally going to register on the Gaming Media Radar and worm my way into Tracy Hickman's sweet silk lace panties.
All right, so let's...
This is a perfect segue, actually.
All right, so...
Oh, God, I hope not. To what? Is there slash fic out there yet? I mean, I know Rule 34, but really?
Yeah, this is what this is, the gateway to disappointment, when you learn that Tracy Hickman's like a bearded man. Yeah.
That's not even true. Don't even say that.
So, all right.
I heard her sterling clarion siren-like voice on the interview episodes, even though I wasn't here to participate.
Yeah. We talked about all the work done by the Hickman sisters when he and his wife co-published something.
Oh, yeah, he and his wife, Margaret Hickman.
Margaret Hickman. All right, so we got Pat has something hanging in front of me, and I've got something in my pocket that's pretty funny.
Yeah, you do.
That sounded bad.
I love it. I like where this is going.
Pat, there's a gift bag on Dan's microphone.
So, which one do you want to go with first?
Well,
my story or Pat's?
Let's do this one first.
Pat's, because Pat doesn't talk.
So in honor of Gen Con, I saw this the other day. I was out shopping with the fam.
And then I raked it over the microphone as slowly and loudly as possible.
I saw this the other day, and I thought, I must buy this for Dan. So I bought Dan a gift.
So let's see. There's a gift bag here. Batman underwear.
I saw it and I'm like, yeah, that is awesome. So I thought Dan has to have that. And then, right, of course,
and those are like stylish guy boxer briefs. Yeah, those are like little boy underpants.
He's gonna have a pair.
And now Pat's taking his pants off. Yes, there's.
Oh my God. God damn it. Put
Pat,
your pants back on.
Just so everyone at home or in their cars or working out knows, Pat protrudes enough that you can see into the folds of his briefs.
Hey,
and whatever's down there.
Hey, and give me a minute and I'll raise the bat symbol as well.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, this does explain several things, none of which are going to involve you disrobing right there. But one was why you sent me an email text message asking what my waist size was.
Yeah, what your waist size was.
And I answered the question, like, why would he want to know what my waist size
is? And then nothing came up for like 2 or 3 weeks.
It's fairly typical.
You didn't immediately think matching underwear?
No, I thought, I had no idea what to think. It's fairly typical for someone to buy you like a random t-shirt.
Yeah.
But waist size, that was an unusual one.
That was. I'm surprised you could ask anything. So I got that for you. And obviously I have my own pair. And of course, so we've got these. We can wear them at Gen Con. I will be wearing this actually is my Gen Con underwear. Right. I will be wearing it every single day.
Dude,
I will take it off, and I will take them off only to shower.
Pat, don't be that guy.
Pat, for 5 years on Fear the Boot, we've talked about how cheap deodorant and soap are.
I love
We've partnered with Geeky Clean to get the musk out. Please bring a change of clothes. You're in my room.
Oh, I'll change clothes, just not my underwear.
All right, well, so then you're getting
I have to say this. I have to say this. They are surprisingly comfortable.
You guys can go butt to butt all night with your little bat sack.
Oh, we will be.
Me and George will be safely apart with our nondescript Walmart boxer briefs.
So, all right.
In the next bed.
Yeah. Pat, first of all, thank you. Second of all, yeah, if you're at Gen Con, look, you know the 3-2-1 rule? Here's my 3-2-1 rule. The actual 3-2-1
rule. I don't know the
3-2-1
rule.
The 3-2-1 rule is every day you need 3 hours of sleep, 2 meals, and 1 shower to survive a con.
Good Lord. That's
I need a little more hours of sleep.
Let me change that to every day you need 3 showers, 3 meals. Let's go 3 meals, 2 showers, and more than 1 change of clothes. It's going to be 100 degrees in Indianapolis.
Oh, my God.
For
actually,
God's
no.
Sake.
It's actually going to be better than that because Zeke the other day was saying it's going to be like in the upper 80s. I'm like, oh, my God, it's going to be like winter there compared to what we're used to here.
But
it was 110 degrees in my car today.
You have my word since you bought this. I will wash this and I will wear this at Gen Con.
Awesome.
One day.
I will not wear the same pair of underwear. I will only wear mine one day.
Thank you.
And at least one night.
Because the Batmobile is the only thing that should be leaving skids. So, I will not be wearing it. All right, so let me tell you guys my story. So today I'm walking down the sidewalk going back to the car after lunch. I'm with a guy I work with named Ryan. And a guy walks up to us with I actually look kind of this gift bag, except it's a lot larger. It's about the size of a grocery bag. It was a fairly nice-looking bag. And said, hey, guys, there's a music festival that's going to be occurring in Columbia, Missouri. And, in fact,
sure, 9th Street.
You can find details at MissouriMusicFest.com. And he said that there's going to be like 50 Cent and Nelly, and he named off a bunch of ours. Actually,
I'm sure Tech N9ne will be there.
It actually sounded like, I don't know, if you're into that kind of music, not a bad show. So, And so I thought, oh, maybe I'll go. And so he produces from his bag what you guys on the mic see right here. I'll describe for the folks at home. It's a silver metal container that's maybe about, I don't know, 2 or 3 inches across, and maybe about half an inch thick. It looks like the sort of container like those.
That's 6 pat inches across.
Yeah, these. According to Pat.
Exactly.
That's like 18 inches. But so he hands this to me, and I'm thinking, oh, cool. You know, inside's going to be some trinkets or like some Altoids or some mints or something
no,
like
that. No, it's cocaine.
Yeah, you're not too far off the truth. So I open this thing, and what do I find inside? But
condoms?
Awesome.
Well, I've got a pocket full of rubbers.
Wait a minute.
Now my homeboys do too.
All of a sudden, I want to go to this music festival.
And so I open it up, and here's this place full of condoms. And I said two things.
There's semi-condoms tomorrow. Give me those.
Okay.
I'm not even kidding you. I will report to you next time I'm on the mic if these get used.
Here's the instructions to it all.
Yeah, I don't need those.
Yeah, no, you probably do. They're special condoms.
There's a crossword puzzle on this.
The instructions are a big fold-out thing that you hold up and it falls down.
Good Lord.
Yeah, it's unfolding the instructions.
Wait a minute, I'm supposed to put this on my...
Well, what you're supposed to... I thought that was the woman's job.
I thought you just, like, touched it up against yourself.
I'm pretty sure that condoms can only be applied by mouth.
So, yeah. We open this thing, and it's... His and mine are both full of condoms. And
this is in Spanish. Boy, do I see 18 years of damages coming out of this company.
Wow.
And so, the first thing that after we get kind of past just the moment of, like, mental shock of this is condoms, not Altoids. Next thing is, like, Ryan comments, man... There's nothing better than street condoms. And I'm like, yeah, nothing really does quite say responsible reproductive health like getting condoms from some random guy walking down the street.
It's true.
When did STDs become STIs? I never see STD anymore.
You know what? You know what that is? That's like a DWI and a DUI.
It's the same thing?
Yeah, okay. It is.
I've always been amused walking down the aisle of a dollar store and seeing the condoms there for a dollar.
Oh my God.
There is one thing I would be willing to spend money on.
Yeah.
That's it.
There are a few things in life where I will not get used. I will not get cheap. I will be a pretentious bastard and spend a ton of money because you cannot afford for this to go wrong. One of them is guns. The other is condoms.
Yeah, I don't buy used condoms either, Dan.
What do you mean I'm supposed to pull this out when I'm done?
You're supposed to pull it out when you're getting started.
I thought I just kind of kept going, and if it just was gone by the time I was finished, it dissolved.
So no, what you do is you pull it out and spray and pray.
Spray. This is Quake 2, gentlemen, not Counter-Strike. You may fire as quickly and rapidly as you can. Okay, so...
Yeah, so anyway, so there's my story for the day is I got the great thing of street condoms.
You want to see it, Pat?
Yeah, I just want to see the thing.
Okay. What I was
taking it.
I was expecting, you know what? My mind filled in something positive. I guess it's like seeing a wrapped gift. You think
the wrapped gift indeed.
Yeah.
I thought mints when you pulled it out.
Yeah. The first thing I thought was I love Tangerine Altoids. And so I thought these things have got to be Tangerine Altoids just because that's what I want right now. And no. It's I know there's an ad in there for them too.
That's funny.
Oh, there's a super sensitive and a classic. I better use the super sensitive. My kind of dead.
Go for the ribbed.
Why do I feel like I'm on an old episode of Kick to the Dice?
You know what's really bad is when Ryan opened his, he had two in there as well, and they were different like models. And one of them had on the front of it a picture of two dudes.
Oh.
Like, oh, ribbed for his rectum.
Nice.
I guess you could still get STDs. I mean, it's not just pregnancy. I don't know.
So, man, this episode's in the toilet. Okay, this is way beyond our
That's
memory.
The intended goal. You don't want to put them in the trash can. I mean, they say it clogs it up, but if I'm in a hotel, I don't care.
That's right.
And I will be.
It's not my problem.
If you're at home, you do not want to flush one of those things. The story here from Mike's life, not about condoms, but he was using baby wipes and flushing them down the toilet, and it completely clogged the plumbing in his basement until the entire sewage line, by sewer, I don't mean rainwater or dishwater here. I mean the worst kind of sewage you can imagine.
Poo-poo.
Yeah, poo-poo, back flooded into his basement.
Oh, he needed a lot of baby wipes for that.
Yeah, and it was freaking nasty. And they had a plumber come over who said he fished out about a box and a half of baby wipes and told him, stop flushing that. And so there's the word of advice. For anyone who's listening, don't flush anything that is not extremely biodegradable because you will regret it in a very, very bad way.
Poo-Poo Bear says,
you cannot cut right, back Dan. On funding. You will regret this.
So I was once in the bathroom at work and I'm sitting
there. Cue the music.
Wayne's Awkward Confessions.
I'm sitting there and I look down at the ground and under the stall there's a flow of water coming in.
Oh.
I'm sitting there, I'm looking down, I'm already seeing this. Well, shit, literally there it is coming through.
Oh my
god. I was like, raise your legs, but it doesn't matter, you gotta put them down sometime. The whole bathroom is flooding from like two stalls over, and I'm in the far stall. I am against the wall, I have two stalls, a sink, everything between me and the door, and you know, you already started, so you can't just get up and run either. So I was like, what do you do?
Dude, I'd get up and run.
I would, yeah.
I would look like Super Saiyan Goku before he got his tail chopped off running out of that bathroom.
That is a horror story.
You better put the moon down or I'm going to turn into an ape.
I'm assuming somebody was in that stall and overflowed it, or did it just spontaneously do it?
I heard the flush.
Okay.
Yeah. I heard the door close and I looked down and here comes the water.
Holy crap.
Oh.
That's horrible.
Unholy crap.
All right. So it looks like we've got a division here. Or before we get into that, Pat, did you want to talk about your Wikipedia article?
Oh, yeah. So I was doing some research today, actually just sort of looking up something. I don't remember. I was looking up the Pledge of Allegiance. And so I typed that in on Google. And, you know, obviously the wiki page comes up. And so I pull it up and I'm reading through it. And you get about halfway down and I'm looking. There's a picture on the Wikipedia article. You can go out and see this. It's right there. And I'm sitting there going, I look at this picture. I do a double take. I'm like, what the f***? Why are school children doing the Nazi salute to an American flag. And I sh** you not, it's called the Bellamy Salute. It's, I think the guy's name was Francis Bellamy, back in like the early 1900s, came up with a salute that is supposed to accompany the Pledge of Allegiance, so that when you say this, you were supposed to salute the flag. And it's the not. It looks like the Nazi salute. The arm up, upheld like this.
Right. The Nazi salute is a Roman salute.
Well, that's
Italian
the thing. It's not. Yeah. It's But it's the one that is people will recognize the Nazi salute.
If you did it today, people would presume you're making up.
Exactly.
Nazi
and that, and that's the thing. And it's exactly what they said. This was the customary salute that you would give as you did the Pledge of Allegiance. Although the apparently at the end of the Bellamy salute, which was on the last phrase on the with liberty and justice for all. As you say that, apparently you turned your palm to face upward, to face the sky. So it was a little bit of a variant, whatever. But anyway, I believe like in 1943 or somewhere around that time frame, Congress passed basically a resolution saying we're ixnay on the Bellamy salute anymore because the Nazis.
So
we no longer do this. But there are pictures. There are two different pictures in there that you can link to where you can actually see little American children saluting the flag.
It is interesting how history colors our interpretation of prior history. Because we look at a picture taken in the 1920s, see kids doing the Bellamy salute, and think Nazism because of the 1930s and 40s, when this was something that predated. It's the same way that if somebody has a swastika tattoo, you don't think, wow, they love Sanskrit.
Right.
You think, wow, here's
the
neo-Nazi.
Well, like I say, you're right. It's whatever's most recent is what is really what colors it.
And so, there are pretty significant stylistic differences between a Hindu swastika and a Nazi swastika. But yes, even if I saw a Hindu one, I would think.
You speak truth, but I don't think the average observer, the average casual observer, would note the differences.
No. Yeah.
And between Sanskrit, between the Nazi swastika.
Some symbols and actions have just been tainted by the actions.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, another good one along the same vein. I think we may have talked about this on an episode previously, but the Charlie Chaplin, which is actually one of the earlier recognizable styles of mustache.
Yeah.
It's not the Charlie Chaplin. It's the Hitler mustache.
No one
can do a Charlie Chaplin type and not be said, oh my God, that's Hitler mustache. It's like, well, no, he didn't start it. And probably, I'm sure Charlie Chaplin didn't either, but he was more synonymous with it than that. But there you go.
So the division we have here is there's a movie coming up. Wayne and I both think, now we've obviously not seen it.
Right.
As of this recording, the movie has not come out. It's my understanding it will be released this coming weekend, which will occur about 3 days or 4 days, whatever, prior to release this episode.
You guys are going to be so drunk at Gen Con, you won't even be thinking about it.
Probably not.
I'll be thinking about anything.
So we have not seen this movie. All we are going off of right now is trailers and early production stuff. There's a movie coming out that Wayne and I both think looks pretty good.
I think it looks like dog crap.
Which is Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Now, let me start off by saying I recognize there's an entire Planet of the Apes mythos that goes back to Charlton Heston days. And after Charlton Heston, there were a bunch of additional movies that were made about the Planet of the Apes.
I am a Planet of the Apes fanboy. I don't know if these even exist.
They were all bad and unnecessary.
I may be the only one.
The first movie was great.
I have the entire box set. I've seen the TV show.
Yeah.
I saw the horrible movie with Marky Mark.
Marky Mark and the Monkey
Bunch. This is going to be another Marky Mark.
I even read the comic book of it right now, and I'm really enjoying that because it's tied into the mythos of the original.
And
so I fully admit, I am a Planet of the Apes fanboy.
Right. And among the earlier ones, they did have something in there about how apes were first used as household servants and how they sort of came into their own.
Most of the pets of the world died of viruses, and they started bringing apes into their house. They learned how smart they were, and then they basically turned them into a slave society.
Right. So then along comes Marky Mark and the Monkey Bunch, which reboots the series. And then following that, now we have a
10 blissful years of people going back and watching the original damn movie.
Well, and now we have one with, what's the guy actor's name?
I don't even know. I've seen
Christian Bale's in the damn thing. Isn't
Andy Serkis is in it. He's the main ape.
The Johnny Depp maybe?
No.
Who
played the Green Goblin son in Spider-Man?
James Franco?
James Franco. That's right.
The movie has James Franco in it as one of the main characters. Told Andy Serkis is apparently the body.
Reprising his role as a CGI monkey.
He's the main monkey.
We saw how well that worked in King Kong. That movie is still screening.
The only thing I'll give this movie is that Andy Serkis in it. He is sort of the go-to guy for any of the, because he's wearing the motion capture suit.
I can't tell one motion capture actor from CGI from another. I mean, yes, it was awesome to see Gollum work how it did, but ooh, Andy Serkis is in the ping pong ball suit. Who gives a
And so let me say straight up that I will be the first, second, third, all the way down through the 5,000th person to tell you that trailers are not always indicative of movie. In fact, we did this as a topic on the show, talking about how trailers oftentimes mislead. Good movies have bad trailers.
Episode one.
Yeah, and bad movies have good trailers. I tell you, looking at the trailer, even to this day, A Phantom Menace, that looks like awesome. A good movie. Wow, that was a steaming pile of crap. But going purely off the trailer, I think this movie actually looks pretty good. It looks like, now, granted, as a pro-human bigot, it will probably offend me because I know how this movie ends.
Yes, because monkeys jump off of things into Apache helicopters and thereby defeat the armed forces of the human world.
Yes.
That doesn't register as a little dumb to you?
No, that registers as a lot dumb to me.
Okay, you know, well, that's the entire movie. Yeah. So how are you saying it looks good?
I do have to say that's one of the cool things about the original series was they didn't just take over.
Exactly!
They rebelled at the same time humans destroyed
themselves. Why I'm mad at this one. The moral of the first one is, hey guys, don't have a strategic nuclear war because you will blow humanity back into caves.
Yep, and at that point, the apes are better suited to survive.
Yeah. But this isn't that. This is like, oh, they found a new kind of hair gel and tested it on monkeys.
Did you use that hair gel, John?
Yes, I did.
Holy f***.
It's gone from an allegory to nuclear war to an allegory to animal product testing, as far as I can tell from the trailer. And the scenario by which even a super intelligent ape organizes his fellow apes to use spears to defeat the United States National Guard. It's strange credulity beyond anything I'm willing to grant, even the most science of science fiction.
And, John, I will 100% concede that point. I have no cogent argument. Any argument I gave would be cognitive dissonance at its best.
Okay. And it still looks cool.
It is.
So your argument is this does look like shit, but I want to see it anyway.
Well,
because that's fine.
Yes, but let me rephrase this a little bit. The entire idea that apes, through physical strength and through spears, could defeat guys in riot armor with shotguns and machine guns is obviously...
Not to mention the civil air defense and armored personnel carriers.
Yes. Well, and quite frankly, anyone with a Magnum revolver.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, this is nonsense at its highest thing. And once again, as a pro-human bigot, the idea that these guys will come along, and by these guys, I mean the apes, will come along and defeat humanity, obviously irritates me to no end.
You know, I think the movie looks intelligent enough that they won't do that. Oh, but I mean, we are seeing the scene of them jumping in the helicopter, and there's going to be some of
that. Dude, there's scenes where they knock over riot police barricades. There's scenes where they jump in and kill a pilot. Like,
but in the longer
it's going to be there.
Here's the thing.
Well, it's even in the name. It's the rise of the Planet of the Apes. I mean, I think you know how it's going to end.
In the longer trailers, there are also scenes, though, of how this ape, after he gets his intelligence, apparently is assigned like a guide dog to an elderly man who's physically infirm. They imply he has Alzheimer's, and how this ape starts caring for this old man and bonds with him and kind of provides for him. And there's this character journey that exists despite the fact that there's also this nonsensical overarching
There can
plot.
Always be fulfilling dramatic side plots and beats in a movie that is procedurally broken beyond fixing.
Well, right, but my question here is,
it's still a shit movie.
And that's the point that I'm more willing to debate, is can you hit a tipping point to where one outbalances the other, to where there is enough good character drama, there is enough good whatever side story that you can simply ignore the rest of it. I mean,
I will give you that an excellent dramatic element can overcome some procedural wishy-washiness, but anything times zero is zero. The most amazing dramatic subplots coupled with monkeys throw pilots out of helicopter, that's the end of the United States military, we all get rounded up into cages, equals zero.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think we'll see after the movie comes out. I really don't think they'll go that direction. I don't think the apes will just take over.
Where the main ape like takes down the defense grids and our reliance on computer and satellite technology is laid bare to all, but it's still going to be because a Magnum could still kill them all.
I will be very disappointed if they do go that direction. I'll be the first to say I'm disappointed.
Well, if you're giving me even odds, I'll take that bet.
I'm with Wayne.
You want to put up?
Obviously, my final view won't be set until I see this movie. And if at the end of it, they do have something where it's not just them knocking guys out of helicopters, but it's all the way to this 100 or 200 or whatever it is, apes take over the U.S. Yeah, that's just going to be like, okay, this was a waste of my time.
That's not how it happens.
But here's the thing.
Of the apes.
Exactly. Yes,
the question, it's not the temporary revolt which is put down of the apes.
But
that's not how it happened in the original series, though.
Well, right. Well, they've abandoned the original series because humanity hasn't destroyed itself.
That's the thing is, I don't know. Is where are they going with this? Is this a standalone movie about apes taking over the world? Or is this like the first of a series where apes reach a level of intelligence and establish a certain level of rights, and then at that point the movie kind of, you know, ends, and maybe in some future movie a nuclear war occurs where they escalate to now these intelligent apes suddenly rule the world? Or is this going to be just that, where, as you said, it ends with the apes basically playing the role of Skynet and ending humanity?
And if the apes manage, if Captain Ape gets a hold of the nuclear football and launches a full strike on Russia to end the world, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
But like, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. I don't know, obviously, until I see the movie, but I will say that, I mean, if they end this in kind of a setup mode, I think it'd be a lot more palatable to me than if they try to end this with a full conclusion of it's done. It is now the planet of the apes, as opposed to it's just, well, the first steps on this slippery slope have been taken.
Yeah. I say save your money and go see Captain America instead.
I didn't even like Captain America. I'd say go see Harry Potter again.
I'd do that too.
I'm a grognard today.
Wow, you didn't like Captain America
either? I'm surly today. I don't know why.
Dude, I'd say stay at home and just get Moon off of Netflix and watch it again and again and again. That's a damn good movie.
I've never seen it.
It's really good. If you've not, go out and grab it off Netflix.
It's been recommended to me by a Netflix bot several times.
It's just called Moon, is all it's called. And it's a great movie.
Chatter, is it about The Who?
Yes.
Awesome.
Chad recommended it to me. I put off watching it for a while, finally grabbed it off Netflix, did not regret it. It was a great movie. Really enjoyed it. Highly recommend it to anyone who's a sci-fi geek who has not seen it. And I thought they were going to go with some very highly cliche sorts of endings to it. They didn't. They really took the movie in a direction that I didn't think they would take it.
And when you finish with that, watch Primer. It's also streaming on Netflix.
Is Moon streaming? I know it's available on Netflix.
I don't know if Moon
is. I
know Primer.
There's been a lot of turmoil lately with the streaming and the not streaming. They've taken down a lot of what once was up.
Oh, yes, they have.
I went to watch Independence Day, and it was just like, not there on streaming.
But so much Star Trek's on there to watch now.
Yeah, everything but Deep Space Nine. But the best one.
Well, especially now that they're splitting their streaming and DVD services, it really does suck they're taking so much streaming content offline.
Get the cheese to sick bay.
I don't have Tex here, but he's got some great stories about when Xbox was first integrating with Netflix. Because apparently Netflix was like, oh yeah, we're ready for some minimal amount of users. And the guys with the Xbox project were like, I'm sorry, I don't think you understand how many people our service has. It's like, yeah, we're ready for like 10,000 concurrent users. And it's like, at any given moment, we have like millions on concurrently.
Wow.
You guys are not even vaguely ready for this. No. I'll have to get him on here sometime to tell the detailed story, but I don't know if I should be repeating this, so I'll just leave it at that. Tex never told me this. I just made it up. So,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. What? I think something's coming up here is it looks like our weekly campaign is probably about to die simply because of the fact that we've had too many interruptions. It has survived an inordinate number of interruptions.
Mm-hmm.
It has survived things that no campaign of ours has previously survived, but we have missed almost 2 or 3 months straight of games, and we are going to miss at least one more month straight because Chad's having some situations with childcare.
Makes me so glad I'm not doing just one game right now, because I would be having gaming withdrawal if I wasn't.
Yeah, that's where I am.
The end result here is we're going to be starting off a new game, and I will probably be GMing it. And as a result, I think this would be a great opportunity when we go back to regular episodes to actually sort of talk through our process of setting this game up. Because we just did this with Chad's campaign, doing his style, the collaborative design, all that stuff. What I'm probably going to be running is Battletech, established setting. There might be some collaboration, but there won't be in terms of the general setting. But how do I set up my notes for this? How do we build the group template? And that's a topic we've been looking to revisit for a while, is the group template. And I think us kicking off this new campaign is a great opportunity for us to revisit a lot of those topics without hammering to death our old stories. So I'm looking forward to getting this new campaign started. I am honestly, and this is not crocodile tears, I am sad our prior campaign is going to die because it was a great campaign. But
I had fun in the couple of sessions I got to get to.
Yeah, I mean, just the inevitabilities at this point, I don't even remember what was going on. The last game we played was after like several weeks of break, and then we had several weeks of break after that. Yeah. And even in that game, it was real awkward because like we were all trying to remember the flow of our characters.
Right. Yeah.
We were trying to kind of pick this up midstream, except none of us remember. It's like Wayne and I were talking about how if we put down a video game or a movie for several weeks, we have to start it over. And it's the same kind of thing of it's just like I've just lost the groove. It's not that I've lost any love for the game, the plot, Chad's GMing, et cetera, the character I'm playing. But I have just completely lost the groove of what was going on and where this was headed. It's, yeah,
the hard thing was after a huge break, we'd come back for one game. It would feel like a first game again. Then we'd have a huge break
again.
And the next game would feel like a first game again.
If we could have rolled into a, you know, 2 or 3 week concurrently playing, I think we would have been okay. But we just have, unfortunately, just as circumstances, as life happens, we just
haven't like most things, inertia applies. Starting something is much harder than doing the middle of it.
Yep. Yeah. In other brief Fear the Boot news, we do have two more charity auctions lined up coming through the March of Dimes thing. Neither of these are available right now. I don't have the details on one of them because I'm going to be working it out at Gen Con. I'm actually supposed to meet with the guys from Gnome Stew who have offered to do some specialized stuff on their blog and also to give some books away. I will have details on that after Gen Con, which once again, this is recorded prior to Gen Con. The other one is USMC Sergeant Dan. He has generously donated one of those really nice black Jenga towers. And what I'm going to try and do is get a copy of Dread. And if I can get a production copy together, get at least a printed copy of some form of Chad's Game Lucid, and we will get those autographed and auction those off as well. So you can get a copy of Dread and also...
Chad should write that damn thing up.
He has.
Commission a couple of pieces.
No, he has. It just needs a little bit of editing work, but he has.
Why not put it up as a PDF for... You know,
he even got Bob Arons to do some editing for him.
Yeah.
Because cool. Bob was looking at it, reading the sheets after trying it. He's like, I have to fix this.
Yeah. Bob's a good guy to have around.
But yeah, so we've got
we'll
also
see him
the
name... 2 days.
A black Jenga tower to go with. It's a really nice, one of those really nice Jenga towers. So I'd love to throw in Dread and, if possible, a copy of Lucid with that. And I think that'll make a great prize. So we've got several more things here coming up with that. But for now, none of those have started yet. So for now, the place we'd love to draw your attention is toward John's Blood Moon Goblin thing. It was a great campaign. I'll tell you right now, even though I'm his friend, obviously sitting here next to him, I intend to donate because I want to see this thing brought to fruition.
Yeah, me too.
And
oh my cocky bitch.
Besides, on top of that, Fear the Boot's been around for 5.5 years without any significant break or pause, and we're finally getting around to putting out some kind of secondary project. So that's got to be worth something.
And the make a damn game call has come from since like episode 3.
Yeah.
So the damn game is coming.
So we're finally getting something out there. It's none of our major projects, but hey, at least we're doing something. So that counts for a lot in my book, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a smaller project. I mean, this thing will not be 500 pages of hardbound. You can knock out your that guy player at the table with the copy of the book.
You stop a bullet with it.
Yeah, no, none of that. But there will be enough there.
That's inspiration a different kind is of bullet. More,
yes,
there,
Dan's
Dan.
Reading the condom book.
No, I actually was surprised. It's a surprisingly graphic series of pictures.
Yeah, I know.
Whoa, what the hell? What
precisely?
Wait until you flip back to the...
Whoa, my goodness.
There's methods of birth control or non-birth control as a percentage of uses. I don't know who they pulled on this, but they're about to be called Daddy and Mama.
Wow, that's awesome.
But anyway, goblins.
Yeah. Wow.
The inspiration was more the... There were a few...
Sorry.
Reverse Dungeon, The Guild of Thieves, The Dungeon Builder's Guide, The World Builder's Guide. Good GM-oriented products released at the end of the second edition cycle that were not huge, but were nonetheless dense and very fun and useful to read. Is what I'm going for.
Cool. All right. I realize this was kind of a short episode, but once again, it's just recording this in the time that we have. prior to going off to Gen Con, so I guess we'll go ahead and wrap this up here. Don't forget to check the feed for This Just In from Gen Con, which will have a lot of press coverage from Gen Con.
Sponsored by who, Dan?
Yeah, which is sponsored by us, and we'll have an episode that focuses purely on us. I understand that we are going to be talking to an organization, I believe, called School on Wheels or something to that effect. I, truth be told, don't know a huge amount about them, but by the time this drops, I will, because I will have talked to them. And we also will probably be on some other recordings. I will get all those links out there. So be sure to check the show notes for a link to John's Kickstarter project and also to any relevant Gen Con coverage we did or any projects we were involved in, so you guys can get your fix of Fear the Boot and or Gen Con.
Yes, and if you're going to Gen Con and you're not involved in our forums, sign up and go to the other conventions forum and get added onto the Topped Bitch list.
Yes.
It has lots of games and lots of group dinners on it all the time, and you don't have to pay anyone anything to do them.
Bingo. You don't have to hand us tickets to do them.
Yeah.
You just show up and enjoy the games the way God meant them to be. So thank you guys for tuning in. Enjoy your week, and we will catch you guys with a regular episode next time. Actually, I lied. It might be an interview next episode. Anyway, see ya.